away in April. You said when it warmed up in April.
I said it's going away, and it is going away.
Ah, yeah, very clever. After all, April still has 24 days left, and it's already down to, what, I don't know, 337,000 cases? And then last week, the media fell for his fake somber Trump shtick and asked him if his thinking had changed from when he said the virus would go away in April.
Is there any fairness to the criticism that you may have lulled Americans into a false sense of security when you were saying things like it's going to go away?
Well, it is.
And that sort of thing. But
Jim, it's going away.
But when you were saying
it's going to go away, hopefully at the end of the month, and if not, it hopefully will be soon after that.
But hasn't your thinking on this evolved?
Jim, it is going away.
Hasn't your thinking on this evolved? You're taking it more seriously now.
I think from the beginning, my attitude was that we have to give this country... I know how bad it was. All you have to do is look at what was going on in China. And we're going to move Easter. We're looking to move Easter. Nobody's ever done this before. This is like a crazy, incredible thing. But we're going to try to move Easter to the week of July 4th. So now we have America's birthday followed by Jesus's birthday, which is, of course, Easter. So we're going to get it done. And then the fake news can't say that I was wrong because we'll be open by New Easter. We're calling it New Easter.
While the U.S. is bracing for an explosion of new coronavirus infections, the White House is also bracing for more backlash. You see, they haven't been listening to coronavirus warnings that they've been receiving for months. Just today, Axios reported that Peter Navarro, Trump's trade advisor, wrote a memo back in January where he warned very accurately that if America didn't take immediate action to stop the coronavirus, it would break out in the United States and it would kill hundreds of thousands of people. And on top of that, he also predicted that it would destroy the economy. So Trump got warnings from the HHS, got warnings from his intelligence agencies, and even got warnings from his own economic advisors. And he didn't heed any of those warnings.
The White House and the CDC now saying Americans should wear face coverings and masks in public. But President Trump says only wear them if you want to, and he's not going to.
I just don't want to wear one myself. It's a recommendation. They recommend it. I won't be doing it personally. It's a recommendation.
And now a message from Smoldery the Bear.
Hello, kids. I'm Smoldery the Bear. And I'm here to remind you that only you can prevent forest fires. Of course, this is a recommendation and I won't be doing it. And hey, even if a fire breaks out, just dump some hydroxychloroquine on the flames. I bet that would put it out. Maybe it would, maybe it won't. What the hell do you got to lose?
Did you know I was number one on Facebook? And I just found out I'm number one on Facebook. I thought that was very nice.
That's not even true. You only have 28 million followers on Facebook. Barack Obama has 53 million. I wish someone would point that out to Trump because it would annoy the hell out of him. He'd force the CDC to update its coronavirus guidelines. 1, stay home. 2, wash your hands. 3, follow Donald Trump on Facebook, but stay 6 feet away from Barack Obama. We've heard he's Facebook friends with Tom Hanks, so his page definitely has it now.
President Trump said over the weekend that despite testing negative for coronavirus twice, he may start taking an experimental drug that's been used to treat malaria.
Bring my friend, I said you called up.
Drumpf!
Day or night, he'll be there anytime at all, Dr.
Drumpf!
Scientists are working hard to develop a coronavirus treatment, but for now, we should all try to avoid misinformation about unproven cures. And there is one popular source of rumors everyone should ignore.
The FDA also gave emergency authorization for hydroxychloroquine. We're just hearing really positive stories. What do you have to lose? I'll say it again. What do you have to lose? Take it. I really think they should take it. But it's their choice. And it's the doctor's choice or the doctors in the hospital. But hydroxychloroquine, try it if you'd like.
Yes, try it if you like it. And if you're worried about the side effects, just remember, Donald Trump is a doctor.
I'm not a doctor.
Okay, my mistake. Turns out, actual doctors do not suggest taking hydroxychloroquine for COVID-19 because there is no evidence yet to suggest it protects against the virus. And also, the drug could cause dangerous irregular heartbeats that could be fatal. Still, Pharmaceutical industry is always ready to sell a new product.
Ask your doctor if hydroxychloroquine is right for you. Then, no matter what they say, try it if you'd like. What have you got to lose? Side effects may include losing a lot.
Trump.
What is Trump offering? Well, like a true huckster, he's selling them an unproven medication that's still in clinical trials, telling people to try it, even though it could have dangerous side effects before it's approved by actual medical professionals.
And I hope they use the hydroxychloroquine, and they can also do it with Z-Pak, subject to your doctor's approval and all of that. But I hope they use it, because I'll tell you what do you have to lose? There's a possibility. And I say it. What do you have to lose? I'll say it again. What do you have to lose? Take it. I really think they should take it. But it's their choice. And it's their doctor's choice or the doctors in the hospital. But hydroxychloroquine, try it if you'd like.
Jesus. We've been calling Trump a snake oil salesman for years, and now he's literally standing at a podium trying to sell us a miracle cure. They call it hydroxychloroquine. And let me tell you, folks, it's a genuine all-purpose miracle cure. Hey, you, sir, you look like you want to say something. Yes, I tried it, and both my acne and my coronavirus went away. And you and I have never met, sir. So there you have it, folks. There you have it. What have you got to lose? By the way, you know Trump and his buddies own stock in hydroxychloroquine because it's a six-syllable word, and he didn't stumble on it once.
Trump.
Our president is also volunteering as a doctor by arbitrarily prescribing lupus pills and fish tank chemicals at every press conference he holds. Trump, over the past few weeks, has been pushing this drug, hydroxychloroquine, very hard, despite repeated warnings from many doctors, including his top health guy, Dr. Fauci, who warned that the drug's effectiveness against this virus hasn't been tested yet. Well, now it turns out Trump's inexplicable passion for this drug might be a bit more explicable. Turns out he has a financial stake in the company that makes the drug. Of course he does. Do we really think he went out of his way to learn to say hydroxychloroquine for no reason?
You have chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine. Hydroxychloroquine, hydroxychloroquine. That's hydroxychloroquine. Hydroxychloroquine. Try it.
It's a great commercial. The president potentially profiting from a drug like this is very unethical. This would be like if he tried to host a G7 summit at one of his own resorts. Oh, he did that? Never mind. You know, if we really wanted to get enough masks to all the hospitals, all we have to do is start printing the word Trump on the front of them and selling them at TrumpStore.com.
If you're down, he'll pick you up, Dr.
Trump.
Take a drink from his special cup, Dr.
Trump.
Dr.
Trump.
He's a man you must believe, helping anyone in need. No one can succeed like Dr.
Trump.
Of course, it makes sense that a lifelong con artist like Trump would push another miracle cure. I mean, this is the same guy who sold people scam vitamin supplements based on a urine test, not made up, a real thing. How would you even tailor vitamins based on someone's urine anyway? By sniffing it?
Smells like you're eating too much asparagus? Here, try some beef pills. They're just tiny meatballs.
Now, obviously, it would be terrific news if a genuine antiviral medication was proven successful in clinical trials. And we're all hoping that happens as soon as possible. But it is dangerous to go on TV and tell people to just try a medication before that medication is proven safe and effective. And yet, Trump is doing it anyway because he's already failed to supply other life-saving equipment, like ventilators.
Trump.
My friend works for the National Health Doctor.
Trump.
Don't pay money just to see yourself with Dr.
Trump.
Dr.
Trump.
You're a new man. He helps you to understand.
Trumpf.
So where did Trump's obsession with hydroxychloroquine come from? Well, apparently, from former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani. Giuliani has been touting the drug as a possible coronavirus treatment in private conversations with the president, which explains Trump's other coronavirus cure, a bottle of Chianti at noon. Rudy has his own team of medical experts advising him, a Long Island family doctor with a following in conservative media, and a former pharmacist who once pleaded guilty to conspiring to extort the actor Steven Seagal.
Well, 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 you're feeling fine. Well, 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 we'll make you
Dr. Trump.
Bring my friend, I said you'd call Dr.
Trump. Trumpf. Trumpf.
The preceding show was recorded at Wavefarms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
Vaya con Dios, my love.
I'm back, honey.
Hi. You know, I tied this string around my finger to remember to tell you something when you got back from shopping. I forgot what it was.
Oh, not again. Well, let's do the rules waiting for the sunrise while you try and think of it.
Dear one, the world is waiting for the sunrise. Every rose is covered with dew. And while the
newly born nervous finger suffers heart attack chatterbox blues. Stop. Speed brings motion into politics, so what gets you there faster makes hard facts dominate. Stop. Human body breaks don't delay digital omniscience. If utter satellite feeds, time running out. Stop. High-flying public pudenda makes pure market frequencies ubiquitous. So what's the big deal given no chance belonged? Stop. Untimely, intimate castaway corpse lubricates whole surface jam. Oh, top 40 rhythm, keep your hands off of me. Stop. Why make the world 22 minutes, twat, when 3 fluid minutes basta ya? Stop. Waste air makes matter move faster, matters not. If tasty on-air diddle gives a tickle fix or stopped dreaming, says famous sex therapist Dr. Ruth. Stop. Too many bloody microbes take time to wash out crash traffic through outhouse bodies through black box survive. Stop. Foster home salt for trench mouth forefinger. That's ouch finger trench mouth salt. This is not a test.
Coming up next from our friends at WOOCLP, our partner station up in Troy. They did an interview with Nick Vanderkolk from the Love and Radio radio show about radio. But first, this next track is When Radios Sleep, What Dreams May Come, from renowned radio artist Anna Frith and Delaware County farmer and radio artist Tiana Kennedy.
Thank you. Nick Vanderkoek, the producer of the podcast Love and Radio, visited the Uptown Summer Youth Employees at the Sanctuary for Independent Media and discussed podcasting techniques as the youth prepare to create audio stories of their own.
It's worked out for me pretty well, but like I kind of did everything opposite. Like how you should.
I kind of grew up listening to a lot of sort of public radio.
One thing that they teach you in that kind of genre is that radio is a didactic medium. It's not enough to sort of present a story. You have to sort of like explain what it means, and you have to sort of explain everything. And that's a totally legit way of going about things. Like, there's a lot of stuff that I love that operates that way, but I personally always found that quite limited. And so even though the show has like evolved a lot over the last 13 years, it's always had that DNA in it of like, I didn't want to tell people like what they were supposed to feel and what they were supposed to think. And so that's why there's very little of me in it. While you're just hearing this voice, and people kind of have to piece it together kind of on their own, which I think can make for like a more powerful storytelling experience, for lack of a better term.
Do you think that radio has become less critical of itself? Radio or podcasts, they've become more narrative, more linear kind of storytelling. So do you think that it's, I mean, obviously it's changing.
Yeah.
Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? What are your thoughts on that?
I'm pretty mixed on it. I mean, I think in some ways, when I was starting out, there was like so little competition out there. And you would think with more shows, there's going to be like more diversity of approaches. But I think also, because there's money in there now, people want to do the thing that is definitely going to succeed. And they do end up sounding pretty similar. There are a lot of, especially in podcasting, there are a lot of shows that are just much easier to produce, mm-hmm. that are like kind of chat-based, and it's like people sitting in a room. And those require some work and thought to make still good, but it's much easier to get like advertisers for that. It's much easier to pitch that to like a network. I tend to record for hours and hours and hours and hours, and then that gets edited down. So I'd say each episode typically takes about a month of work.
How do you prep people if you're telling their story, and do you like ask them questions while they're doing it?
Typically, and this is just sort of how, this wasn't necessarily intentional, but you tend to hear a lot more questions as the story goes on, because it's also just like, There's a certain style in sort of radio documentary, for lack of a better term, where you completely cut out the interviewer and it's just sort of this monologue. And I personally like to be reminded that there is someone else in the room that's asking questions, so that you have to have like a little bit of skepticism, I think. So I don't prep people other than to sort of describe the process and describe the show. And say, you know, this is all pre-recorded, so, like, if you want to back up and go again, that's totally cool. And then we just kind of wing it. And then you just have to sort of respect their space and kind of let them sort of take the lead on sort of what they're comfortable with, you know. I don't get to do face-to-face interviews all that much these days, but it's also quite... It's, like, relatively easy, too. Like, now you can kind of interview people from wherever. And there's lots of great tools where they can kind of mic themselves as well. Like, now we have advertisers, we have some resources, so we can usually get, like, an engineer to go and record the person in person. And so I'll interview them over the phone, or a producer of mine will interview them over the phone, and someone else will be in the room with them recording them. And then we combine the tape together, so it basically sounds like they're in the same room. That's called a tape sync. In general, I do two-hour interviews. The first one tends to have very little structure to it, where I'm really just kind of like just following my own curiosity about the person and just having a discussion around it. The second interview, at that point, I have a better understanding of like what the shape of the story ought to be. so the second interview tends to be much more directed, just sort of like kind of the skeleton of the story. And then based on those two things, then we begin the process of editing, and in the process of editing, we tend to notice, well, there's this, like, actually, this is this question that, like, I actually hadn't really considered now that I'm, like, listening to him tell the story again. So let's go back and we'll ask him that. Or he didn't tell this thing. He told this one story in a slightly confusing way. Maybe we can have him retell that piece. So then we do a third follow-up interview, and that one tends to be a bit shorter because we know sort of like, okay, we want to get this, and this, and then hopefully, like, we have everything that we need from that.
So one thing I heard that is very cool, is that you, as a radio artist and a storyteller, are using some other audio tracks to emotionally carry the story on. Could you talk about that a little?
We use music. There's a lot of kind of subtle stuff going on. We actually, like, we run the voice through filters, so we're just sort of creating that space. We're just, like, very focused on the audio and also just sort of how the audio interacts. If it is a piece that has, like, kind of rich audio elements, to begin with, I will be collecting the sounds in the moment. In terms of finding the subjects, it's, well, as the show has become more popular, we have relied more and more on kind of outside pitches, so, like, listeners will write in with ideas for stories, or radio freelancers who will pitch stuff to us. But before that, it really was kind of all over the shop. I mean, sometimes it was just, like, stories that, like, a friend would tell me, you know, oh, my neighbor, you know, down the block, like, he's a survivalist or whatever. I didn't actually do that story, but I don't know. But someone was telling me about that the other day. Sometimes it's because we have this, like, slightly strange format, it's also very, very helpful for doing stuff that has been in the news to some degree. So, for instance, I did a story about a guy who...
Todd Merrill, you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Lakewood, Catskill, Hudson. Radio, made with radio.
Hay acciones cotidianas para ayudar a prevenir la propagación de enfermedades respiratorias. Lávese las manos. Evite el contacto cercano con las personas enfermas. Evite tocarse los ojos, la nariz y la boca. Quédese en casa cuando esté enfermo. Cúbrase al toser o estornudar. Limpie y desinfecte de manera frecuente los objetos que toca. Para obtener más información, visite cdc.gov/COVID-19. Este mensaje es gentileza de la National Association of Broadcasters y de esta estación.
WGXC Underwriting Support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Garrett Roche of Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You're tuned to Radio Art, creative transmissions, sound experiments, noise, and more on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre.
Elections and movements in the time of the pandemic. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan, and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. We're podcasting from the epicenter of the pandemic in the United States, New York City. Mass movements make history. They don't follow a prescribed trajectory. They aren't predictable. Bernie Sanders' bid for the Democratic presidential nomination is a case in point. On Wednesday, Sanders suspended his campaign, making former Vice President Joe Biden the presumptive nominee. Sanders stated,
"While this campaign is coming to an end, our movement is not."
Expressions of disappointment flooded the internet as millions of his supporters heard the news. "Our hearts are heavy," Araceli Jimenez of the Climate Justice Sunrise Movement said in a statement. She went on, "In Bernie Sanders, we had a presidential candidate whose visionary solutions, Medicare for all, the Green New Deal, paid sick leave, are exactly the policies we need to get out of the crises we're living through now," she said. The progressive movement's arrayed against President Donald Trump and all he represents now find themselves in the blistering crucible of the COVID-19 pandemic and its consequent economic recession, if not outright depression. Traditional organizing, rallies, door knocking, face-to-face meetings are essentially shut down. Ingenuity and resilience will be needed to prevail in the coming months. Bernie Sanders understands the long haul. In August 1963, age 21, he was arrested protesting school segregation in Chicago. 4 months earlier, on Good Friday, Martin Luther King Jr. was arrested for the 13th time, protesting segregation in Birmingham, Alabama. There he wrote his letter from a Birmingham jail, responding to 8 white Alabama clergymen who labeled him an outsider and criticized his tactics. They wrote, "We recognize the natural impatience of people who feel that their hopes are slow in being realized." They went on, "But we are convinced that these demonstrations are unwise and untimely." Dr. King replied in his famous letter using the racial lexicon of the time.
"For years now, I have heard the word wait. It rings in the ear of every Negro with piercing familiarity. This wait has almost always meant never. We must come to see with one of our distinguished jurists that justice too long delayed is justice denied."
In his campaign suspension announcement, Senator Bernie Sanders said,
"Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. reminded us that, quote, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice," end quote. "The fight for justice is what our campaign has been about. The fight for justice is what our movement remains about."
New York Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, perhaps the most prominent and youngest of the progressive activists elected to Congress in 2018, endorsed Sanders early in his campaign. Now they're working together to shape federal pandemic response legislation.
"One of the key things that we must push for, we must fight for, is the same thing that we have continued to fight for. We need to make sure that, I believe, that there are very strong concessions and accommodations made for a progressive future in our country."
AOC said this week on the Democracy Now! NewsHour, Ocasio-Cortez is outraged by the racial disparity among pandemic victims. She tweeted on Friday, "COVID deaths are disproportionately spiking in black and brown communities. Why? Because the chronic toll of redlining, environmental racism, wealth gap, etc., are underlying health conditions. Inequality is a comorbidity. COVID relief should be drafted with a lens of reparations, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tweeted. The statistics backing up her tweet are grim. In Louisiana, African Americans comprise about a third of the population, but 70% of the COVID-19 deaths. In Michigan and Illinois, African Americans make up 14 to 15% of the population and 41% of the COVID-19 deaths. Racial disparities are also evident in COVID-19 deaths in New York City, the epicenter of the pandemic in the United States. The actual number of deaths will likely never be known, as people, often the undocumented and those on the margins of society, are dying at home, uncounted.
We should have universal systems where every person can see the doctor free of charge when they need to see it so that they can get the care that they need. That is what it means to live in an advanced and modern and humane society. And so long as we don't do that, we have not earned the right to call ourselves one.
Congressmember Ocasio-Cortez added on the Democracy Now! NewsHour. Noam Chomsky, world-renowned linguist, author, and dissident, is 91 years old, the same age Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. would be had he not been assassinated on April 4, 1968, and lived to today.
It's common to say now that the Sanders campaign failed. I think that's a mistake.
So said Professor Chomsky on Democracy Now!
I think it was an extraordinary success, completely shifted the arena of debate and discussion. Issues that were unthinkable a couple of years ago are now right in the middle of attention. The worst crime he committed in the eyes of the establishment is not the policies proposing. It's the fact that he was able to inspire popular movements which had already been developing, Occupy, Black Lives Matter, many others, and turn them into an activist movement which doesn't just show up every couple of years to push a lever and then go home, but applies constant pressure, constant activism.
Surviving this pandemic will require global solidarity, discipline, and compassion. Grassroots social movements aren't deferring to the Biden campaign or the Democratic Party. Like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., they refuse to wait. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
German measles, Russian flu, Montezuma's revenge. And why do we say a foreign word whenever someone sneezes? Tomorrow, I'll take a look at swine flu, up close and personal. This is Les Nesbitt.
Yeah, for some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
Are you ready for this radiophonic and meta-radiophonic trip?
Radio.
Creature.
Radio. Creature.
Radio.
Out.
Radio Creature.
A radiophonic happening.
Un happening radiophonique live du Recyclard
live
à Bruxelles.
From Recyclard in Brussels.
Radio.
Radio.
Creature. Radio Creature. En streaming sur Radio Panic.
Radiopanic.org. A liquid journey.
Un viaje entre Buenos Aires.
Dakar, Milano, Napoli, Rabat.
Firenze,
de La Paz, Tenerife, Madrid, Barcelona,
Marseille. Or at your home.
Radio Creatures.
Radio Creatures.
Un momento de escucha colectiva.
Car la radio est fluide, rassembleuse, plurielle, partout.
Like the fire burns, like the wind blows.